Welcome to Insider Insights, where we dive into hot topics facing the financial services industry. Today, hear from Kartik Sakthavall, Chief Information Officer at Limra & Loma, Nelson Lee, founder of Infraz, formerly iLife Technologies, and John Ketty, VP Insurance Strategy and Solutions at Lazarus AI, as they dive into one of the most talked about trends of the year, agent and agentic AI.
Well, good afternoon and welcome, everybody. I'm Kartik Sakthavall, Vice President, Global CIO for Limra & Loma. I am super excited to moderate today's discussion on one of the most exciting developments in technology, specifically in the field of AI, agents and agentic AI. So before we introduce our esteemed panelists, right, let's just level set. The use of AI in our industry is not new, right? We've been leveraging AI across the value chain for several years, whether it's for automated accelerated underwriting, whether it's in marketing, whether it's in actuarial, but something dramatically shifted in the first quarter of 2023, right? It was generative AI, ChatGPT ushered in the explosive renaissance of AI by democratizing artificial intelligence for the masses, right? So in my opinion, if 2023 and 2024 will be remembered as the rise of generative AI, 2025 onwards will more than likely be remembered for the growth of AI agents and agentic AI. You know, we've assembled the industry with our AI industry group with here at Limra & Loma. We now enjoy participation from over 135 business and technology executives on this group. And it is by far established that AI agents and agentic AI are going to be the next wave of all things artificial intelligence, just as we are figuring out how to incorporate generative AI across the value chain. Just something to know, the words agentic AI and AI agents, despite being used synonymously, they are related, closely related, but they are not the same, right? I do fundamentally believe that AI agents, agentic AI, can add significant value across the insurance value chain on the entirety of the ecosystem. So look, you know, AI is moving so rapidly, you know, just as you have figured something out, a new AI innovation comes across that that kind of makes it seems antiquated, right? So since this is new, and since our industry is still in the learning curve with all things artificial intelligence and generative AI, there is a significant gap in awareness, knowledge, and understanding of this new wave of AI. We do believe that these technologies, agentic ecosystems, are rapidly poised to transform the industry, right? So in order to level set, raise the collective awareness, and educate ourselves on what AI agents and agentic AI mean, and more importantly, what they mean for us in our industry, I am joined by two of my really close friends, and just amazing forward-thinking leaders in this space. So first off, my pleasure to introduce John Ketty, who's the Vice President of Insurance and Strategy Solutions at Lazarus AI. John brings over 20 years of experience. John, you started when you were 5 years old, right? In the intersection of enterprise technology, AI, and strategic consulting. Before his time at Lazarus, John has held roles, including Chief Information Officer, Chief Operating Officer, CISO, Chief Technology Officer within the insurance industry. Lazarus AI has quickly emerged as a standout in the AI ecosystem in this AI space as they help insurers harness small language models, and we'll talk about that in a second, right? And agentic frameworks in order to drive speed, efficiency, and the optimization of AI at scale. Joining us as well, this is us getting the band back together again between John, Nelson, and I, is Nelson Lee, who's the founder and CEO of Infraz. Infraz, formerly known as iLife Technologies, Infraz provides headless connectivity infrastructure that enables insurance carriers to support any distributor UI without rebuilding an entire application. By transforming back-end business logic into reusable headless UI components, Infraz helps carriers eliminate costly one-off projects, improve their data quality, and scale more efficiently across distribution channels. Under Nelson's leadership, Infraz is redefining how carriers connect with distributors, making infrastructure reusable, flexible, and most importantly, built for scale. So in my opinion, together, John and Nelson are such an integral force within our industry ecosystem. to help organizations understand, be more aware of all things AI, and help them transform from static siloed systems to dynamic, intelligent ecosystems. So I'm super excited to learn from their insights. I always feel like I get more than I give in every conversation with Nelson and John. So just like with the rise of Gen AI, agentic has both sparked confusion and curiosity. You know, it was interesting, John, earlier this year in Q1, you and I both heard this across multiple forums. You know, our industry, when folks hear the word agents, it's often misinterpreted and misconstrued with, you know, call center agents, right? Life insurance agents, you know, customer service agents. But I think it's important for us to continue doing that that level of education because, you know, as we talked about in multiple forums earlier this year, John, with the industry, you can't necessarily take the ostrich principle, right? You can't bury your head in the sand and just things won't change. I'm just going to let this technology pass me by, right? So we do need to embrace it. We need to double down on it. So let's just level set for the audience, right, John? So if you can help us understand in your own words, if you can define what agentic AI and AI agents mean, specifically in today's insurance context, John, and how they differ from traditional AI tools, that would be pretty helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is the right place to start. And typically, I think about things very simplistically. So here's how I think about agentic AI vis-a-vis other parts of AI. So let's start with non-agentic AI, make calibrate on that, or use case AI. We would assign a task, just like you used to assign a human to do the task, AI can do it today. Like, go read this handwriting and analyze that. What's said here? Or go to this underwriting file, read the entire file and share with the underwriter the three largest risks, or go to this set of documents and extract these data elements. All things that in the past human intelligence would do, now AI can do all of those and many, many more things. But you can see from all my examples, those are tasks and activities, and each one of them adds value and they aren't going away, by the way. This is not a webinar that some buzzword and everything you've ever done before gets thrown out the window. No. Wrong. So again, these non-agentic, this use case, task-based AI that adds value will persist. But when we think about true agentic AI, we now get to the next level. It's not task. How do we execute an entire process? So we might say in the life new business domain, how do we prepare an application, interrogate, get all the information, analyze, look for inconsistencies, pull it all together, have a human review it and sign off because humans are critical for agentic and critical component, and then go hit the underwriting engine and come back with a recommendation. Auto claims might be a similar situation. Review all of these items and input, look for inconsistencies, potential fraud, come back with a recommendation on what the human should do. And as I think about this, agentic AI has to orchestrate and has to work across legacy tools and technologies. They're not going away. Other AI tools and capabilities, those are a piece of agentic. Humans are absolutely a critical part of an agentic framework and all modes of input where the agentic is in consolidating, incorporating, and then the output is value. How is value created? Either through risk reduction, more efficiency, you know, faster time to market, things that really add value to the business. Agentic AI is not exciting because it's cool. No one cares about cool. How does it create value? And if anyone's interesting, I have a mind-numbingly simple visual I'll be glad to send you that just captures this. So to summarize, non-agentic AI creates value, solving tasks. True agentic AI solves and executes major business processes to create value by orchestrating across all the different elements I talked about. And that's how I think about it, Cardi.
I think that's a great explanation. Nelson, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I totally agree with John's assessment. The way I look at it is, agentic AI carries two traits that prior generations of AI or automation in general don't carry. Number one, agentic means, when we say, you brought up a good point, Kartik, when we say agent, we mean that more in a principal agent or on your behalf type of capacity, as opposed to, say, an insurance. We often think of an insurance agent. And with something agentic, the number one trait is it does something on your behalf. So for example, if we ask AI a question and it tells me an answer and consults me on what to do, but doesn't do it for me, that is not quite agentic, right? So that's trait number one. I think a key trait number two is that, as John mentioned, I call it the ability to reason. In prior generations of automation, it was more akin to an Excel spreadsheet or a calculator. If you give it very clear instructions with no vagueness, what does 1 + 1 equal? The calculator or Excel will tell you 2. And some in the past may argue that it's automation or AI, right? But agentic AI can operate in vague environments and reason, right? Go into a very large database or file and tell me what you think and do the actions that you should. That's operating without a super clear set of instructions, just like humans would, right? It has context, it has reasons, it has memory. And that's what fundamentally, like John was saying, reshapes entire workflows, as opposed to the do this one thing for me as long as you have super clear instructions.
Yeah, you're so right, Nelson. And I think that's where I see confusion as I work in the industry, where people are like, oh, what you're describing, we're going to have to write hundreds of thousands of lines of code. I'm like, no.
Or scripts.
Right. That's a BPM system or an orchestra. That's something else. There has to be a level of intelligence here, as you point out. So couldn't agree more.
You know, no wonder the concepts can get confusing, right? Agentic AI and AI agents can be fairly esoteric. Up until now, every technology that we've had, including machine learning, artificial intelligence, has required human beings to program it, if then else, right? It's ones and zeros. It gets pretty predictable and follows predictable paths. But what I am hearing is there is some level of agency to AI agents, hence the word agentic AI and AI agents, right? So I'm just going to try and summarize what I heard from both of you, Nelson and John. And if I get something wrong, please do clarify it, because I think it's helpful for us to all be grounded on a common set and understanding of AI agents, agentic AI, right? So in my opinion, from what I heard from you guys, an AI agent is an AI system that can actually perceive its environment. It can process information. It can make some independent decisions and then take some actions to achieve the goal that you asked it to, right? So if I were to draw an analogy, I can think of an AI agent like a digital employee, right? An individual contributor, for lack of a better word, who has a very specific job to do, right? That can handle some tasks independently with little to no supervision, right? So, and then agentic is more of an orchestration tier, right? So it can take decisions, it can make decisions, it can plan, autonomously take actions to achieve some level of higher complexity objectives, potentially across an entire ecosystem, right? So the way I understand agentic AI would be like an AI manager, an orchestrator in response, who's responsible for the individual contributors of AI agents, right? So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so, exactly right. In our tools and technologies, like, we often give a context. This is the process you need to execute. This is the role. Give some guidance, just like you would an employee. But as we're all agreeing, it's not hundreds of thousands of lines. It's not, you know, infinite levels of detail. There is intelligence applied and used as it executes that process.
So would it be fair for us to describe a relatable analogy to be an AI agent would be comparable to your car's GPS, right? The system provides you with route guidance, but ultimately it requires you, the motorist, the driver of the vehicle, to get to the destination, right? Agentic AI perhaps is more like a self-driving car, if you will, right? Knows your desired destination, can safely transport you there, but makes decisions in real time, right? Without requirement of a human intervention, right? So navigate pedestrians, you know, find the best path that's least congested, the least amount of energy or whatever else. And I think that's probably a good analogy. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's very good. And again, the human decides what's acceptable. It's like, right. Wait a minute, I didn't end up at Costco. Okay, well, right. That was the wrong answer.
Everybody but wants to end up at Costco.
What's that?
Everybody wants to end up at Costco.
It's just an example. I'm not at Costco.
Well, you end up at Costco regardless of whether you wanted to do that or not.
Exactly. So, but if that's where you didn't, you know, that wasn't your target, then you'd say, well, that wasn't right. The human is still accepting what was the right answer. But you're exactly right, Kartik. When you say to your car, take me to, if I was trying to go to Walmart, you wouldn't say, now I'm going to say, drive 50 feet here, turn this left. You wouldn't put all that in. So I think it's a very good analogy. In fact, I'm going to steal it for the future.
Steal away, bro. So since you have the talking stick, John, let's continue on that thread, right? Let's come back home from Costco and go to our industry. Demystify this for us, right? What are some of the most compelling real-world use cases of agentic AI, AI agents included, that you're seeing? So maybe proactive customer engagement, policy servicing, claims triage. What are some of the more common things you're seeing?
Yeah, well, for the life and annuity industry, it's not going to surprise anyone on this call. Historically, investment skews more towards life, new business, underwriting. Claims, you'll see investment skew a little more. P&C, you'll see investment skew a little more towards claims. I'm not saying they don't invest in underwriting. I'm just saying if you look at the data, that's what the data would tell you. So not surprising, the conversations we're having in the life and new business, life and annuity arena are going to skew towards new business, underwriting. How do we lower the burden of all these forms that we have to have? They're legally required, but how do we gather this information that and require the least amount of an applicant or agent? And so that's where we see a lot of interest there. To your very good question about service, unfortunately, I'm not seeing as much action there as I would like. I think that these tools and technologies have a great capability to help in the service arena. Again, working with humans, not replacing humans. And I think there's a lot of anxiety, and let's be blunt, things like IVRs have not worked out as well from a service experience as so many people had hoped. And I think there's a lot of concern about the machine, and I don't want to deal with this. I think our industry needs to really step up and be able to say, how do we use these technologies and tools to deliver engaging experiences that are end-to-end, and not just like a task like getting a cash value, that's trivial. But how would someone call in Saturday night and say, I want a cash distribution from my UL policy? And I'm not quite sure I understand what that is. And I don't understand the tax implications, but you know, being able to be led through in a very conversant, supporting manner in a process that humans approved and signed off and may review on Monday morning, everything that went on, that I think is a huge, huge opportunity for industry. So like I say, seeing action, life and under the new business and underwriting, not surprising, not seeing as much in service as I would like to see.
But also the opportunities there are equitably exciting, right? I mean, if you think about a call center, a customer service center, that's a tough job, right? These individuals, they've got 17 different systems that don't talk to each other. They've got like 20 different screens, right? You're expected to provide fast food turnaround times with white glove service level service agreement. You're the brand ambassador of your firm. You're also expected to be on the front lines of insurance fraud. So if you can deploy something like an IVR, a smarter, more agentic IVR, to offset some of the more, I would say, rote calls that customer service reps get and reinvest, I don't know, 10, 20, 30% of their time into pursuing LOMA ACS, right? The customer service designation. Yeah. I think that's when you start pivoting that conversation into creating jobs, taking jobs into careers. I think it's incredibly valuable. I think even IVRs have come a long way in just the past 5 years, right? I mean, if you think about IVRs 5 years ago, who you are as a human being truly manifests itself on how aggressive you get when you call the 800 number and ask for an operator. But the modern IVRs are pretty slick as well. Nelson, what do you think?
I think though you're exactly right, Carl, but I envision getting to a much, much higher level. So the engagement from agentic will be when the person's calling in Saturday night, I need a distribution for my UL policy, and they get an explanation and they say, I didn't understand that. I didn't understand the tax implications. Go a different way. as opposed to getting canned responses, being able to engage and have understanding and offer, well, you want a document emailed to you while we talk through this. It's got to be a far more robust engagement. If it's just IVR on steroids, I fear it'll flunk the drug test and you'll be back to IVRs.
Man, can you imagine the customer service implications, though? Think about what an engaging experience that would be. It's super exciting. Nelson, anything to add?
Yeah, I think humans have a really important but shifting role when AI becomes agentic. And I think of it, I come from a technical background, so I think it's really like the evolution of, say, computers or math and sciences in general. Let's think of it as an abstraction layer. Abstraction, I generally define as the process to still get something done, but removing complexity in the process for the user. So when computers were first invented, when computers were literally the size of an entire room, right? Computer science and language literally meant zeros and ones. We had assembly, and then we had COBOL. And then when I went to school, we no longer did zeros and ones. Nobody coded in zeros and ones, quite literally. Everyone used Java and Python or high-level programming language like that. That is an abstraction of zeros and ones. And now AI is simply taking it from Java and Python into English language. I don't think that necessarily means human doesn't have a role to play. Just like when we went from zeros to ones to Java, some people said you were taking away the value of a human engineer, but I think that just shifts the value chain and it shifts it into something else. I think that humans fundamentally will find more valuable and enjoy prior to the shift from programming language to native, say, English language. The value accumulation was generally in the doing of things, right? Humans know what to do and we do it by clicking on a mouse or entering keystrokes on a keyboard and the ability to answer questions. But with agentic AI, AI is pretty good at answering questions, pretty good at clicking stuff or doing stuff in general. So the value assignment for humans shifts to those of being creative and making decisions, review, approval, having an informed opinion, right? And also asking questions. AI's output, AI's good at answering questions as long as you give a good question. So I think the value accrued at the human level shifts from the ability to answer and do into the ability to ask questions, ability to review, and ability to approve. And whatever organization or teams of humans can recognize that shifts, they will be the winners in getting the most value out of AIs as opposed to being in a fear-based environment.
So I love that, right? So,
like if you think about it, when the calculator was invented, a lot of people said, well, math teachers will not have jobs, but we simply went from doing math in our heads on a chalkboard on a piece of paper to on a calculator, but we still had jobs, we still had things to think about, we still had to review and approve things. Math and sciences didn't become irrelevant, and we just no longer do math manually on a piece of paper.
And so Nelson, when these massive enterprise level changes come about, right? Business process changes. Everybody says they want change, but no one wants to change, right? When these things start changing, the human component, the human in the loop for AI, but also it's a human story, right? How, in your opinion, what organizational and cultural shifts are required for achieving success in these implementations?
I think it's really a shift that has every human really focus on the outcome as opposed to the process itself. The key word you mentioned, Kartik, a lot of times people want change, but they don't want to change. I think what that really reflects is fundamental human psychology where humans want better outcomes, but they don't want to change their habits, right? We're creatures of habits, right? I would like to do the same thing. I have always done it in the past, and yet I would like different results, which is quite literally the definition of sanity, right? But if we change that line of thinking, we simply focus on the results, then the focus isn't on whether I need to change, you know, how I click a certain thing on a certain screen with a certain system vendor. It just doesn't matter anymore. We shift the focus on results. Then we focus, what is the fastest way to get to the change I want? And maybe instead of like, how do I do most work? Maybe do the, go the opposite. How do I not do the work and get the result I want? And that's where agentic stuff really, really shines, because you shift into the role of deciding and questioning what should you do and what should, maybe more importantly, what should you not do?
Yeah, that's great, Nelson.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And Kartik, I think you could do a whole webinar just on the question you asked. Just real quickly, agree with everything Nelson said. And I think that all of us realize, and I mean all of us, parts of our jobs and roles are going to be under tremendous stress. Those very mechanical things we should give to AI. I'm a great believer, don't get into fights with AI over mechanical things, not worth it. But that also, in a very positive manner, means the actions on humanity, insights, creativity, curiosity, all those uniquely human things, I think we need to double down on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So John, let's shift gears for a second, right? Because there was a question in the chat from Aaron Walter as well, which is thematically similar with where we were talking about. How do you reconcile and balance human in the center, human in the loop, which has been the predicate of all our AI implementations, right? With honestly increased, potentially increased risk with AI making autonomous decisions, right? So what kind of governance stuff, governance frameworks, controls, best practices, maybe some of the stuff that we're doing with our AI industry group, what are some of those things, guardrails, that are critical to ensure responsible and trustworthy agentic AI?
Yeah. So we were talking, I think, about some exciting stuff, agentic, and we're going to talk as time allows about new opportunities with agentic. And I hope everyone finds that really exciting. The fact of the matter is a lot of important things about agentic are really, really boring old stuff. For instance, we've already alluded, one of the key parts of agentic is agency. How much agency do you allow? Well, that's really the authorization question. How are agents authenticated? You don't want to set up an agentic framework and have agents from anywhere, including within your company, coming into the process. Things even like, what do we name the agents? How are they coordinated? And if anyone lived through the object-oriented revolution of a few years ago, many of these themes I'm bringing up are the same themes we had to deal with during that paradigm shift. So even though we're talking about these important strategic forces, there's a whole level of very mechanical things under the surface that companies have been dealing with for years with their CISO and ERM committees and controls and on that are ever more important in the age of agentic AI. And if companies have only been paying lip service to those topics, then they could be at more risk. But from my experience, insurers take this stuff really, really seriously. So all of those things are ever more important. And then as we've discussed, the human in the loop is absolutely critical. Humans do not go away in the world of agentic AI. And there's also things that I believe that agentic can do. So we've talked about giving instruction, execute this process. But some of the other instruction you give is please document every single step that you take. Document every update in your thinking as you go through and see things. And the capabilities that we have today is to provide extraordinarily detailed documentation from these tools. Real quick anecdote, we were working with one of the largest insurance companies, life insurance companies on the planet. They said up front, one concern we have about agentic is our attorneys won't be comfortable with the level of documentation. We said, let's show you. So we showed the level of documentation that the agentic was going through. They said, our attorneys won't like that. It's too detailed. So it's one of those things where sometimes you can't win, but the fact of the matter is, humans don't like doing documentation. In these types of processes, one of the controls is document everything. And then, of course, the insurance company to decide what they want to retain and keep.
That's great, John. Thank you. And you thematically touched upon a question that Kayla Cirillo had in the chat. And I'm paraphrasing your question, Kayla. It was around, how do we get people comfortable with AI making decisions versus people who continue to leverage AI, but ultimately end up making the decisions themselves, right? Yet leveraging the data to pull the decisions themselves. And my opinion, I think it's a cultural shift, right? The more comfort that we have, the more confidence that we have, I think that will shift over time. But some level of oversight, some level of double checking what your AI is producing is absolutely appropriate, right? AI systems can hallucinate regardless of whether it's generative AI, whether it's AI agents or agentic AI. And our industry prioritizes ethics over performance or anything else, right? So I think that level of spot checking, double checking, auditing is absolutely invaluable. But I think it's also a cultural shift for us to be able to delegate more and more tasks to an AI system, and that will, I think, come over time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But again, here's where I'm optimistic, where our industry already has some of those patterns. For instance, there are probably carriers on this phone that can guarantee a face up to $50,000 and a human doesn't have to see it today. The same company, if they go issue $100 million face, may say, absolutely, humans are going to be reviewing this and we're going to be talking to reinsurers and so on and so forth. So I think many of the patterns that we've developed with human intelligence, we need to carry over and apply to the artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I like it. And I'm just doing a quick scan of the chat. So Randy Epright had a question on the current status and evolution of Gen AI. And I'm paraphrasing Randy. It's how do you make a decision, build versus buy? And spot on. So right now I mentioned our AI industry group with over 135 executives. We have three active subcommittees, and as it so happens, John Getty is co-lead of one of the subcommittees. We're trying to get a scientific methodology to let organizations effectuate that decisioning between build versus buy and versus partner, right? And I think I think this is a rubric for organizations to be able to get there. I do suspect a lot of times that Gen AI models are effectively going to be commodities over some period of time. We will probably see more AI as a service than we don't.
I think it's already a commodity as of today.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. And then Nelson, Cam had a question. Hey, Cam, good to hear from you. Can you describe how an organization may tackle the implementation of agentic AI? Where do they start? What steps they might take, especially if you want to ensure quality? I think that's a great question. And Nelson, if you can pick that up and just talk about how our agentic AI systems today delivering on the promise that was assured to us earlier this year. What early results are you seeing?
And I think what Cam asked has, you know, some relevance to what Kayla asked earlier about, you know, humans, you know, not trusting what AI does and wanting to cross-check and do the work themselves. I think the way to ensure quality, number one thing to do to ensure quality is to define what is quality. And I think it's very, very, very important. We don't expect AI to be a magic bullet where we give it one prompt, it gets everything 100% correct all the time on everything forever. Because clearly that is not going to happen. That's not what it's meant for. Rather, I think it's to speed up the repetitive nature of things that humans would otherwise do, and humans would make mistakes too. So for example, just for discussion's sake, pre-AI, we would have humans pull data or read PDFs or read pieces of paper. Humans would then come back with summaries and reports. And humans, as you can expect, are not perfect. But we trust the humans we work with because we are familiar with them, and we have some mental model around, I know humans might be, you know, they're not 100%, but they're like the humans I trust maybe are 90, 95%, right? So my role is to review and scan for those potential 5% mistakes. That's how we should interact with AI. If we interact with AI and in a reviewer's and decision maker's point of view, I think it will speed up the process as an organization. Like, at what point can I just review as opposed to wait for stuff to be reviewed? The waiting period without AI can be pretty long. But if we are of the expectation, every single thing will be 100% perfection and AI will never make mistakes, then quality is never going to be there because that's simply not what AI is meant to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Nelson. Sometimes I joke around that since we're now in the age of AI, I suddenly have realized humans were perfect. They were 100% right and there was no bias, which is, of course, absurd. And you're right. We have to step back and say, well, what are our expectations of humans? And then apply that to AI. And I think the paradigm you outlined is about the only rational way of thinking that through.
Yeah. Yeah. And what when we work with humans, John, and we know, you know, humans will make mistakes just like all of us here. What do we do when we anticipate there may be some amount of mistakes? We look at them, we review, we try and catch them, and we put some guardrails in infrastructure. Hopefully we catch more with less effort, and then we move on.
Absolutely. And where humans making mistakes has bigger risk, we invest more in mitigation. And where humans making mistake has very little risk from a dollar or a compliance standpoint, we don't invest as much. So agreed.
I think the key difference that Kayla pointed out, I think Kayla mentioned humans polling data to make decisions versus AI doing it. I think polling data and making a decision are actually two entirely separate tasks.
Yeah.
So pre-AI, if John and I were decision makers, we would just wait around for hours, days, weeks for like, you know, whatever set of humans to pull the data, and then we make a decision. Now we go straight to the decision.
Yeah. So John, building on what Nelson just said, right? What are the top three things if Cam Crosby comes to you and says, "Hey, I want to start my organization with agentic AI," what would you say the top three things that Cam needs to do?
Well, here are the three steps, as I would think. Number one is start with non-agentic. Make sure your organization understands the possibilities and the weaknesses of AI today. As Nelson and I were just commenting, just as humans aren't perfect, AI isn't perfect. And the AI models and tools and technologies can be quite different, and they're evolving very quickly. So I'd actually say start with non-agentic AI. And understand, again, the value it brings to your organization and the weaknesses. Number two is be very actively educated. This webinar this afternoon is one attempt to do that. LIMRA does all kinds of wonderful other things to support the industry to be educated, but I would say be educated. Feel free to talk to tech leaders and you know, don't assume you have to come with some level of expertise. Just bring your questions and your comments. That's step two. And then step three is once you have some understanding of non-agentic, you're educated on what's possible in the technology, then come up with use cases that add value. Trust me, no one cares about cool. It has to create value. And when you see those opportunities, those are the three steps I would see. And I would suggest all companies start going through those. Because you don't want to suddenly realize in your marketplace that the competitors that you have been going through those steps. Seeing the impact of agentic may be something that suddenly you feel something different has changed in the competitive environment and you're not sure why. You don't want to be in that position. Like I said, go through those steps now and take advantage of the opportunities and avoid the perils.
Great. So John, Cindy asked a great question. What are the key components that we need to keep in mind when organizations are formulating an AI safe use policy? I think this is where we should talk about our AI industry group for a second. Our group has, you know, it's not just us meeting and talking about the state of the industry with respect to AI, but this is actually a working group, right? We are producing tools, frameworks, scorecards, best practices, and industry standards by the industry for the industry. You know, I mentioned some of the subcommittees that we have going, but one of our earliest deliverables, Cindy, for LIMRA and LOMA members has been an AI safe use policy template. It was beguiling how many carriers actually lacked a documented policy for their employees. Feel free not to expatriate our intellectual property into public ChatGPT, right? So we have an AI safe use policy, we have a Gen AI safe use policy, LIMRA.com, trending topics, artificial intelligence, right? You'll find those templates. You'll find cost-benefit analyses for AI. You'll find ROI calculators, as well as webinars, white papers, best practices, and a whole bunch more. I think we've got about over two dozen frameworks and best practices already been published, John.
Yeah. Well, in addition, the great work LIMRA is doing just to facilitate conversation. So I have no doubt, I think I can speak for you on this. If somebody goes through the frameworks and says, I want to talk to somebody who may have a similar challenge or problem, you'd be able to connect them with someone else. So I 100%. Think all of those things are very powerful. And frankly, you know, I have the great opportunity to actually work across multiple industries. I don't see any industry that's doing some of the things you just outlined.
I agree, John. And I have to quote the former chief AI officer of Northwestern Mutual, and she sits across, like you, multiple industries as well. No other industry, no other sector, no other vertical has been able to do the work of the AI industry group. I would argue successfully, life insurance and annuities is ahead of the curve in terms of establishing these best practices and industry standards so that everybody succeeds. And they're also customizable, right? They're turnkey. You can download them and plug them into your network and you're off to the races. But you can also customize them, make them bespoke to you, your firm. If you already have something, merge it so you're incorporating industry themes and best practices into your frameworks as well. You know, no one's accused the insurance industry of having any legacy systems, right? I think this is an alien concept to everybody listening. But how do you balance legacy systems, which are continue to be an albatross, right, around our neck? How do you balance the legacy systems, and how does agentic play in those environments, right? What kind of integration challenges should firms know about?
Yeah, absolutely. So certainly legacy systems are the bane of our existence. They have been ever since I've been in the industry. Lots and lots of solutions have been addressed to or used to try to address them. And I'm optimistic in that language models and agentic AI may be a silver bullet, or if not a silver bullet, a really good brass bullet to finally address the challenges we have. So in April in New York, I was doing a talk actually on agentic AI, and I said to the people in the room, you will live to see a day where systems are developed by a language model going through, analyzing legacy code, producing draft output, people talking to a system saying, when you rewrite that, I want the new user interface to look like this. They may have scribbled notes. They may be holding up PowerPoints or inserting PowerPoints. Code will be produced. Test cases will be produced, and a new system will emerge. And then humans will have to come in and fix all the test cases that failed, all the code that was suboptimal, and definitely the integration points. Because again, we want to repeat throughout, agentic AI does not get rid of humans. Humans just have different roles. So going through and cleaning things up, signing off, fixing integration points, that is, like I said, in April, I told a group of people, we will see that. I was trying to be a little provocative and a little bit, you know, expanding people's minds. When I went back to New York 2 weeks ago, so first week of June, 8 weeks later, had the same conversation, and pretty much everyone was like, of course, that's the way systems are going to be developed. It's obvious. So in an 8 week period, that shows you how rapid the thinking. Now, the people weren't saying LLM, including agentic AI approaches, they weren't using those terms, but their expectation of how legacy systems and new systems would be developed had emerged using those concepts. So that's something to think about. Again, I'm very optimistic that this will help deal with legacy systems and so on, but humans will have a lot of work to do in that time frame.
I love that. And it kind of touches upon Matt's question in the chat, right? And I'm paraphrasing. Matt's question was, you know, we're all busy, right? In addition to that, now we have to oversee these AI agents as well. How are we going to be able to do that? And Matt, it's my opinion, I think the simplest answer is the more we can leverage, delegate rote, repeatable operational tasks to AI, right? Whether it's a generative AI, whether it's an AI agent, and free up our own capacity, that's the mindset and the time shift that you would spend in overseeing and being the human in the loop, human in the center for AI systems. If you can think about ourselves, you know, just a simple example of authoring emails. If you can think of yourself of going from being an author to being an editor, I think that's the value proposition of leveraging AI, right? Hopefully I answered your question. Great question, though.
I think also to think about what are we busy with today, right? Because the fact to say that we are already busy, how do we find time for X, is the assumption that X won't make us less busy on the current things. So it's really like, I am busy with a set of tasks, and what should I be busy with instead? As opposed to being just like incremental additional thing I'm busy with and not getting rid of the things I was busy with prior.
I love that. And part of our AI industry group set of deliverables has been a framework that you can go across the value chain and generically, right? Generically across the value chain. So underwriting, analyst, what have you, crack open a role, evaluate the tasks that are generic across the role, across the industry, right? And articulate which ones of them are most ripe to be automated by virtue of AI, right? And do a risk trade-off. So again, those are available for LIMRA and LOMA members on our site as well, should you be so curious. So Nelson, in 2 minutes or less, if you can walk us through just the highlights of a client success story that you've had recently. What did the client need? How did you integrate and implement Agentic with them? And what are you seeing for some early results?
Yeah, so we're an infrastructure company, and the most classic case we see with carrier customers is that they don't really have control over what I consider infrastructure. They have a lot of point solutions. And point solutions make it really, really hard to take full advantage of AI. So I'll first define what is a point solution versus infrastructure. Point solution means it is usable for one use case or one channel or one set of products, but not across the board. So the lack of reusability across channels, products, or functions would define something as a point solution. And a lot of times, insurance carriers have many, 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 many point solutions, and stringing them together is costly or impossible, and different vendors don't want to or are not able to work with each other effectively, right? So they need to own infrastructure in a more reusable and horizontal, like enterprise level type of way. So the number one thing I've seen people reap the benefits from is when they take a step back and say, hey, I want to configure and build my own infrastructure at my level and consolidate from, say, 20 point solutions across 20 channels or 20 lines of business into one thing I can reuse for workflow automation. A whole new set of opportunities open up. For example, when you have reusable infrastructure, you have a relatively more single source of truth. And then companies like John's company can deliver a lot more value if you don't have data spread over 26 different vendors, right? Because models can achieve a lot of different things, but at the end of the day, they do depend on having quality input. They do depend on having infrastructure. We in tech, we call it the rails, right? As in guardrails. It needs good rails to build on. So a lot of success from my vantage point has always been how do you own and build and configure your own infrastructure? And that it's okay to have buy versus build versus partner conversations there. But the thing is, make sure you have infrastructure that is AI ready as opposed to point solutions galore.
That's great, Nelson. So, 30 seconds, starting with you, Nelson, and then John, looking ahead to 2026 and beyond, how do you anticipate agentic AI evolving in the insurance space? So 30 seconds or less, top three items.
John, did you want to take that first?
Sure. So the evolution is going to be twofold. It's internal and external. Vendors are already actively putting them into their tools. In using agentic solutions. So even if you're not going to incorporate your company, part of your vendor management process, better be watching what your vendors are doing on the front. Secondly, look for areas of value. We talked about that earlier, going through the three steps. I think that holds up. Use non-agentic AI, create value, get educated, do a lot of engagement, and then look for your agentic AI where it adds value at your company. Nelson, over to you.
I think in 26, the conversation will really shift from, is AI a real thing and will it take my job? So a really fear-based conversation. In 26, it will go from that to how do we become the winners of this wave? How do we become the humans that win in the wave of AI? Second thing would be, I think people are focused a lot more on being ready for AI as opposed to focusing on the hype. As much as all the industries have done, I think the vast majority of AI hype today focuses on a lot of consumer use cases. So we'll be focusing on, really B2B enterprise value props. And third, I think people will really be able to define in 26 what AI native skill sets for humans really mean. I don't think people are aligned with what that means as of today.
Yeah, I agree with that. Nelson, John, thank you so much for your time. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks for listening to LIMRA's Insider Insights podcast series. To hear future podcasts, subscribe at limra.com/podcast.